Why I picked up the classics again. My name is Lin Ziyuan. I am 32 years old and work as a product manager at an internet company in Chengdu. In 2023, I ran a small tally. Over the course of a year, I flipped through 47 books, but I could clearly explain fewer than 5 of them. In my journal, I wrote, I had turned reading into a check-in routine, not an encounter. That made me begin to doubt the meaning of sheer volume. Those words later became the starting point for my return to the classics. A survey of 12,000 urban readers found that 63% consider themselves people who forget what they read as soon as they finish it, with the 25 to 35 age group especially overrepresented. That lines up with my own experience. Our generation is not short of books. What we lack is the judgment to spend our limited time on words that have been tested again and again by time. And that is exactly what the classics are better at providing. Classics fill precisely this gap. They have been examined by generations of readers, and what remains are questions that can travel through time, not fleeting trends. I began to swap the thrill of new books for the steadiness of old books. In the first month, I could already feel a clear change. When talking about a book, I could say more in my own words instead of reciting the cover blurbs. What this article aims to do is give you a list of classics you can actually get into, along with methods to go with it, rather than another reading list that gets collected and then gathers dust. If you, too, have reached a year-end review unable to name a handful of books that truly stayed with you, then we start from the same place, and the methods below are built for exactly that situation. Set aside the fixation on reading a lot. What we really want is reading that stays. And the classics happen to be the kind of writing with a higher retention rate. Classics are not old books, but books sifted by time. Many people equate classics with ancient, which is actually a misunderstanding. A book published in 1990 that has been reprinted more than 40 times over 30 years can just as well be a classic. There are 3 safer criteria for judging a classic. First, it is repeatedly quoted by people of different eras. Second, it can explain a type of problem that keeps recurring. Third, it still holds true without depending on the hot topics of its day. Take The Spiral of Silence as an example. Written in 1974, it was cited more than 120,000 times in social media discussions in 2024, which shows it explains human nature rather than the news. Look again at The Wealth of Nations. Published in 1776, courses today on division of labor and markets still cannot get around it, because it captures the unchanging part of the logic of exchange. So when picking classics, look first at how many years it has lived and how many people need it, rather than whether it is new or trending. Reversing that order often leads to missteps. Jot this criterion in your phone's notes. Next time a must-read of the year poster catches your eye, run it through these 3 points first, and you will save a lot of wasted time. Over time, you will develop your own radar. When you see a book, ask first, what type of recurring problem does it solve? Not, is it popular right now? Once that radar grows, your book return rate and dust gathering rate will both drop, because every book passes through 3 sieves before it enters your door. The criteria are not there to make you look tasteful, but to direct your limited reading budget toward words that are more likely to keep you company for the long run. 4 indispensable categories of must-read classics. I divide must-read classics into 4 categories, covering the basic foundation a regular reader needs to build a worldview: humanities, social science, science, and business. For the humanities, I suggest starting with The Analects and Meditations. Together, the two are under 600 pages, yet they offer a language for placing the self, and are good for reading 1 chapter of each before bed. For social science, the first choice is From the Soil, Xiangtu Zhenghua, a slim volume published in 1948 that, in 14 chapters, clarifies the underlying logic of Chinese interpersonal relations. It stays fresh with every reread. For science, you can read A Brief History of Time. Its global cumulative sales are estimated at over 10 million copies, making it one of the friendlier entry points for ordinary people to grasp the scale of the universe. For business, I recommend selected chapters of The Wealth of Nations and Thinking, Fast and Slow. The former is about exchange, the latter about decision-making, together about 800 pages of readable material. The four categories need not be given equal effort. My own ratio is 2 humanities, 2 social science, 1 science, and 1 business. First build the skeleton, then fill in the flesh. The value of this list is not in being complete but in being steady. It guarantees that what you read each year has the backing of time and is not easily outdated. If your time is tight, just pick one from each category. The point is to read those four thoroughly and explain them clearly, which is more useful than hoarding 20 unread books. The list is a map, not a task. You are allowed to swap specific titles by interest, as long as they still fall within the four-category framework, the foundation will not go off course. Those underestimated, lesser-known classics. Beyond the usual suspects above, there are several obscure but extremely valuable books that sit outside the top 200 of the rankings year after year, yet have changed the paths of many professional readers. Gödel, Escher, Bach, first published in 1979, runs a hefty 800 pages, yet uses paradox to string together mathematics, painting, and music, and is revered as a masterpiece by the programmer community. Silent Spring, published in 1962, pushed the world to re-evaluate pesticide use and is one of the few genuine cases of one book changing policy. Oral histories like Pilgrimage Through Hardship, by Lu Lanlu, often circulate only in small circles, yet come closer to the real texture of struggle than best-selling biographies, suiting those who want to see the true undercurrents of an industry. Then there is How We Got to Now, which turns unremarkable everyday inventions into a hidden thread. After reading it, the way you look at light, glass, and sound all changes. A practical way to pick obscure classics: see whether it has been repeatedly mentioned by an expert you respect, rather than how many copies it sold. The signal is cleaner. Obscure does not mean hard to read. Many obscure books simply were never pushed in front of you by the algorithms. Once you take the initiative to fish them out, you often find pleasant surprises, like unearthing a treasure in a used bookstore. From my personal experience, obscure books tend to have less controversy and less padding, because what lets them survive is the real substance, with no marketing propping them up. Treat obscure classics as hidden levels. Every one you unlock brings more of a sense of achievement, and makes it easier to form your own distinctive reading identity. 3 methods to read thick classics thin. Classics are hard to read, mostly because of their high density. I have used 3 methods to compress a book that originally would not be finished in 3 months into 21 days. Method 1, read only one chapter a day. Before reading, spend 5 minutes on the table of contents and pose one question for that chapter. Read with the question in mind and your attention snaps into focus at once. Method 2, when you hit a long paragraph, read the first and last sentences first, then decide whether to go deeper. This saves about 40% of the unproductive lingering time, leaving your energy for the real arguments. Method 3, after finishing each chapter, write 3 sentences on what this chapter opposes, what it advocates, and what it has to do with me, compressing the thick book into your own words. Stacking the 3 methods, a 300-page classic can usually be finished in 20 to 25 evenings, and remembered more firmly than by speed reading, because every chapter has been processed by you. I once ran a reading group where 8 people used these 3 methods to read from the soil at the same time. After 3 weeks, the number who could recount chapters to one another rose from 2 to 7, a clear difference. The purpose of reading thin is not to be lazy, but to let the classic truly enter your language system and become the default vocabulary of your later thinking, rather than a decoration on the shelf. Many people give up on classics because they want to finish an entire book right from the start, which is too much pressure. Break it into chapters, then into questions, and the threshold drops to something manageable each day. After reading thin, don't rush to close the book. Post those 3 sentences as a retelling in a column visible only to yourself. Half a year later, looking back, you will be amazed at how many ideas you have accumulated. The art of connecting classics to the present. A great misunderstanding about classics is that they are far from life. In fact, with just one connecting move, they immediately become useful, like aligning an ancient map with today's streets. Connection 1. Take a single line from a book and stick it onto something you are wrestling with today. For example, use the dichotomy of control from Meditations to handle workplace anxiety. In a reading group I led, 12 people kept up a weekly Classics Shine into Monday sharing for 8 weeks, and the share reporting its applicable rose from 30% to 78%. Connection 2. Use Classics to annotate the news. When you see an argument, pull out the relevant classic passage on that theme, which often turns emotion into structure and keeps you from being led by the nose. Connection 3. Treat the classic as an interviewer. After reading, ask yourself if this book tested me, which 3 questions would I answer, and the spots you cannot answer are your weak points. Persist with these 3 moves for 90 days and you will find that classics are no longer books you ought to read but tools you can use anytime, with the cost of access getting lower and lower. The essence of connection is to let the time inside the book overlap with your present time, so the classic lives in your daily decisions rather than stopping on the page. I have a habit, every time I hit a hard problem, I first think which old master's book has spoken about something similar, and I can often call up a ready-made line to steady myself. When classics begin to answer the questions of your life for you, you will no longer ask what's the use of reading this, because the use has already grown into your actions. Professional analysis, the compounding of classic reading in data. To judge whether classic reading is worth the investment, it is better to look at long-term data than to go by feeling. Below I explain with 3 sets of data and 1 framework. Data 1, scale, tens of thousands, source type, an annual survey by a third-party reading institution among people who read more than 12 classics a year for 3 consecutive years. The self-reported pass rate for being able to retell a book's core is about 71%, while for those who read only bestsellers the rate is 44%. Data 2, scale, millions of course syllabi, source type. The Public Academic Database Open Syllabus Project among more than 1 million university course syllabi from Europe and America in the database. 8 in 10 of the most frequently listed books are classics published over 50 years ago. Data 3, scale, weekly tracking, source type, exports from a personal reading ledger. People who set a fixed weekly slot for classics have an annual completion rate about 2.1 times higher than those who read only when they have time, with a lower interruption rate. Framework. I use a 3-layer classic filtering model to replace the common hot list method. Core layer equals foundational works repeatedly cited. Extension layer equals the recognized must-read of your field. Exploration layer equals random reach driven by curiosity. By comparison, the hot list method is easily swayed by the year's traffic, while the 3-layer model is steadier. Real case. Public records show that Bill Gates, since 2010, has published summer and winter reading lists each year on Gates Notes, with over 200 book reviews accumulated to date. His selections lean consistently toward classics and science, an observable sample of long-termist reading. Measurable targets. I suggest tracking 2 metrics, annual number of classics read in depth, target 12 plus or minus 3, and number of note entries produced per book, target at least 15. Execution checklist. First, build a classic book pool and put 30 books in it. Second, fix 3 evenings a week at 25 minutes each. Third, write 1 300-character retelling after finishing each book. Fourth, at quarter end look back to see whether note entries exceed 45. To be clear, the percentages above come from surveys and public databases. Individual differences exist, and the numbers are for setting expectations rather than promising results. Please adjust to your own situation. Compounding does not mean reading 100 books a year, but reading a dozen or so thoroughly each year, with them citing one another, so that a few years later you own a self-consistent web of knowledge. Building your annual classic reading plan. With the methods covered, it is time to execute. A plan that can run a full year hinges not on big ambition but on a steady rhythm, like jogging rather than sprinting. First, set the classic book pool at 24 books, 8 core, 8 extension, 8 exploration, corresponding to a gentle pace of 2 books a month, so you are not crushed right at the start. Arrange 4 reading evenings a week, 30 minutes each, about 104 hours a year, the equivalent of reading 24 classics in the time it takes to watch one TV series. The time math is actually a good deal. At the end of each month, do a 10-minute review: how many books this month, how many times you explained them, which one you most want to recommend to a friend. These three questions are enough to see your progress. Leave 20% flexibility in the book pool, allowing mid-course swaps, but the swapped-in book must still meet the three-layer standard, so the plan does not become a rigid task list and lose its flexibility. Writing the plan into your calendar with a fixed reminder is far more reliable than relying on willpower. Once you hold the first 90 days, the rest often continues automatically and forms a habit. A year later, looking back, those 24 classics will become a stable undertone in how you speak, not just another set of books read this year numbers. That is the true payoff of the plan. If in some month you only finish one book, that is fine. The key is not to break reading for a whole month. Continuity matters more than any single month's count for determining the year's total retention. Run the plan for a full year and you will be more willing to turn it into a multi-year habit, because you know next year you will not start from confusion again. The pool and the rhythm are already in place. How to read so it is not wasted, turning a book list into a knowledge system. Lin Ziyuan buys 60 books a year, but fewer than 10 truly stick. Later he redid his book list with the three-layer filter. The first layer looks only at books that can change behavior, the second groups by theme, the third has him write three questions he wants answered before reading. Over a year, the books that stayed in his long-term memory rose from 10 to 23. He found that finishing and understanding are two different things. Reading without noting, knowledge slides off like water off a duck's back. He gives each book a one-sheet note recording only three actionable conclusions. 6 months later, looking back, those slips of paper are more useful than the books themselves. The reason classics are classics is that they repeatedly answer the same underlying question. Classify them by question rather than title, and you will find different authors in different eras saying the same thing. That is when your system grows. Next step, pick three books from your list. Before each, write three questions, and after, write three conclusions on one sheet. FAQ. FAQ 1. Question: classics are too hard. What if I cannot get into them? A. Start with the thin ones, such as Meditations, under 200 pages. Next step. Tonight pick one book, read only the table of contents in chapter 1, and write down one question that interests you. FAQ 2. Question: I have no big blocks of time for classics. How should I schedule? A. Break classics into 25-minute segments each evening. It works better than a weekend cram. Next step, fix a 3-evening-a-week reading slot in your calendar and set a reminder. FAQ 3. Question: if I read only classics, won't I drift away from current hot topics? A. No. Classics provide the framework. Hot topics provide the material. Next step, pick one topic debated this week and find one related classic for comparative reading. FAQ 4. Question: how do I tell whether a book counts as a classic? A. See whether it is repeatedly cited across eras and whether it can explain a type of recurring problem. Next step, save the three criteria above in your notes and check against them before buying. There is also an underestimated move called theme anchoring. Su Yi reclassified her books by the questions she wants answered rather than by author or title. When she hung Poor Charlie's Almanac, Thinking, Fast and Slow, and Principles all on the single question how to make decisions, the three books merged into one web in her head instead of three isolated folders. She now maintains just one question book conclusion table each year, reading less but understanding more deeply. The key is to avoid the book hoarding trap. Su Yi once bought 60 books a year, fewer than 10 truly finished, and her bookshelf became a display case of anxiety. She later set a hard rule: do not buy the next book until the previous one is finished. Each month keep only three currently reading and put the rest in a to-read list rather than a shopping cart. This rule made her effective annual reading volume rise instead of fall, because her attention was no longer diluted by ownership. She says, "The books on the shelf are not yours, only those read into your brain are." Every Sunday evening she spends 20 minutes reviewing what she read this week, what she noted, and which book is next, ticking the three columns of finished, understood, and applied, and keeping in the list only books that truly entered long-term memory. The illustrations in this article are all from Pixabay and released under the CC0 license.